Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Madnin!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal. Hey Bunty, so here we are back again with part two of the discussion about NRIs. Taking off from your comments, Bunty, you made a very good observation, which is that you have a NRI here, who is, let's say, a second-generation NRI. Parents came here, and the narrative is, you know, we braved the seven seas. We came here at a time when there weren't many Indians. So, you know, I've heard all of these stories, how the Indian community was very small. We had to all bandy together. And, you know, I don't want to minimize it. I don't want to trivialize it. And I don't want to mock that experience. But sometimes it all gets a bit much with the stories about you never had garam masala. And, you know, we used to smuggle garam masala tied in our saris in a knot and so on. Yeah. The other day, I heard this bizarre story about Indian women actually bringing, you know, that little bit of dahi tied in a knot in their sari, because, you know, with a little bit of curd, you can make more curd, right? You just put it in milk and so on. So there are all these legendary stories, and you know how your father had to put up with a lot of racism, and there were people at his workplace who mocked his accent and all. Now, we have worked very hard. You've gone to Stanford. So now what happens is that Stanford / Harvard / Cornell dude / Goldman Sachs dude meets a guy from India, you know, guy maybe from, you know, wherever, whichever college, you know, maybe he has an MBA, maybe he doesn't, maybe he's an engineer, maybe he's a humanities guy, an economics guy, or a person. Now you have this colleague who comes from India, and he / she, and you know, we have these top sort of companies that all Indian middle class / elite people aspire to, now recruiting directly from India. So you have someone in Google, Goldman Sachs, McKinsey, etc., picking up someone from India, and here's a person next to you who has not had the benefit of this Ivy League education, but is also very well educated and is making as much as you are. And suddenly Correct. What it does is it throws your entire life into crisis, because it just also throws this entire narrative that you've been brought up with. It sort of undermines that entire narrative. And I think that's when you start getting some of the hostility.
Yeah, and you take an adversarial position, because your adversarial position comes from the fact that you've been led to believe that because you've had these struggles and because you've left the home country behind, you are naturally going to be a better, bigger, brighter person.
Right.
And lo and behold, somebody comes alongside you. And so we want to see it from both sides. There is an issue that people who are second generation, third generation in the US and the UK, and we are speaking from those experiences, they genuinely have an issue about dealing with other people who are of Indian origin, right? And I don't want to talk about Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Sri Lankan, because I do not have many friends who are in that milieu.
Right.
The second issue is people who themselves are first generation immigrants, and how they try and distance themselves from their roots and you know, what their lives are. So sometimes I find the reason I get irritated when people start making too many comments about air conditioning, cleanliness, and corruption, and other such things. And these are all acceptable problems, right?
Right.
The reason it gets me is because the sum total of India as a country can't be reduced into a not working air conditioning and a cab driver who fleeced you for $20 or whatever it is scheme of things, right? And people, particularly NRIs, younger generation NRIs who've come here, they come kind of zero in on that aspect.
Right.
But I think some of that's changing, because, you know, some of my cousins who've moved to other parts of the world, I think it's all about being comfortable, you know, with the gas and the accelerator, gas and the brake on, you know, your Indianness.
Because totally, it's about being comfortable in your skin. Absolutely right, and it's
correct.
It's about this divided self. Yeah, yeah. So,
And I think to divide itself, the other point, sorry, you wanted to make a
oh
point,
no no go
Rupo.
ahead go ahead go ahead I can, yeah.
I think the other thing that people do is when they have kids in a foreign country, they try and dial up the Indian aspect of it, right? And let me give an
Right.
example of what this means. In the UK, it means that you're forced into learning a particular type of dance and a particular type of music. Now, and I'm not going to go into the format of the dance and the music because there are many. Let us say the people who are dispensing these kind of training programs in dancing and singing for young children are basically themselves bored housewives who are not actually in the least bit qualified to
Right.
train people up in these arts, art forms, right? If
Right.
they are to be taken as serious
Or
art forms.
retired uncles.
Or retired uncles, right? So the version of India that is being handed out here in amongst the diaspora community is a very poor, twisted, secondhand version of something,
Right.
which actually oftentimes doesn't have any bearing
Right.
with. So what I try and tell my friends is the best way to keep connecting with India is not to go to a ghetto-like situation and listen to sitar and watch Hindi movies, but make the time and the effort to go back to India and, meet with family, meet with friends, have holidays, without getting overtly blinkered about the difficulties that a country like India presents
Right.
itself. That because that's the best way in which you can learn about the country,
Right.
rather than these kind of secondhand holding forts in
Right.
suburban ghettos of South Asia, kind of Indian communities.
Yeah. Well, I'll make a few points. I think the you raised the question of kids and socializing children. And first, I'm not unsympathetic to the underlying imperative because it's a valid question that your children may want to know where they come from. There's no reason why they should be ashamed of their identity. They have the right to both their sameness, the same rights as
Correct.
anyone else, and they have the right to their difference as well, right? You want to be able to eat your food, to wear your clothes, to speak in a particular way without being mocked. So I completely get that. And people absolutely have the right to do what they want to. If someone wants to go to Rama send their kids to Ramayana camp, Mahabharat camp, teach them three languages, four dances, that's absolutely fine. What makes me very uncomfortable is this prescriptive nature that, boss, you have to do this. Ye aapko karna chahiye, right? That all good Indians, all good second generation Indians are supposed to do this. You must send your kid to maths tuition when he's three or she's three. You have to learn one Indian language, right? So this have to business, this idea of following a social script, which is, I think, a particularly Indian kind of malady, it's very constricting. And again, you're right that who are the people, who are these experts? It's you have some uncle who is retired now and he's at the local temple. He's essentially putting up PowerPoint slides of yoga and boring not just children but other adults, including his own contemporaries, out of their skin. So we accept that all identity is imagined. It seems to me that diasporic identity, NRI identity, seems to be imagined in a particularly impoverished manner. So that's one thing.
True.
The second thing that happens with regard to children is that a lot of people they may be very accomplished, but there are challenges that you face in another country, including glass ceiling, including racism. All of this is accepted. So, in some way, the success of the children becomes basically the proof or the test that their having migrated to the US, UK, or wherever they are was worth it. So,
Correct, correct. Very well spotted.
a lot of aspiration is projected onto them, right? And then there's like massive amount of boasting. And the boasting is, again, there's a very interesting ambivalence and contradiction about Indian culture, that on the one hand, it's, he speaks four languages, but the other hand is that hamara bachcha sirf pizza burger khata hai, It's almost a perverse
Right.
kind of pride that, he doesn't eat Indian food because look at him, he's like, such a wonderful little American in some ways. But at other points, he or she is strategically very, very Indian. And I think that a friend of mine who made a very interesting remark. He was talking about a relative of his who's here in the US, and it's a remark about the distance people traveled and how we need to sort of develop a kind of nuanced understanding. And he said his uncle or whoever has in one of these towns in the Bay Area, Fremont or Sunnyvale, said he has a massive house, he has BMW, etc., whatever, 50, 60, 80 inch TV. But he said at the end of the day, he is in middle management here. And this person's own father, person's father, he says his dad, his parents live in Bombay and they live in a two-bedroom apartment, which I think they own. And he said his dad works for a government public sector firm. But he said, if you look at the distance my dad has traveled in his own firm, in the context of India, he has actually done much better professionally than his uncle, who has an eight-bedroom house in Sunnyvale, because his uncle, at the end of the day, is middle management in an American firm. And I think this is, again, something that a lot of NRIs get very prickly about, because, you know, if you look at achievement to achievement, talking in that very sort of crude, blunt sense, they actually haven't done that much. Sure, you got the BMW in the US and the 60-inch TV, but in the grand scheme of things, you've actually not done as well as someone who has been much more successful professionally in an Indian public sector context or even a private sector context, even if they don't have the BMW and the same material goods. So those would be a few thoughts I have along this issue.
No, I think you make a very interesting point, Rohit. And I think, in the discussion, we've tried to, in the two parts that we've kind of structured this discussion in, and obviously we haven't structured it very intelligently because we're doing this straight off the bat. The first bit, we were looking at the issues of, you know, how people came to particular countries and how kind of this adversarial tendencies crept up and how they expressed themselves about, you know, liking and disliking India. In this half of the discussion, I think we touched upon how NRI communities are bringing up children and what can be the signposting. And look, like we were saying, that, you know, there is no good or bad in how you parent a child, in terms of each to his own, and everybody knows best there for their child. But I think this jabardasti of, you know, things need to be done in a particular way is right. Something that we are absolutely right in calling out, that, you know, you do not have to learn particular languages, learn particular dance form, learn particular forms of music for your son or daughter to feel more or less Indian, because I think that happens naturally over time. And I think the meaning of what it means to be Indian is also gradually changing.
Right.
Because, you know, and I think that's what we need to say here.
Yeah, I think that sums it up really well, Bunty. And on this note, I think we should wrap this up. So excellent discussion. We'll still go back to the NRI theme, much to mine still. But for now, I think we'll leave it at this. Okay. All right, man. Take care. We'll chat again.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Chalo. Take care. Bye-bye.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.